For the past 11 days, prisoners in California have staged the largest hunger strike in the state's history. And it comes at a time when much of the rest of California's prison system, the largest in the nation, is already in turmoil. We're joined now by Pulitzer Prize-winning Los Angeles Times reporter Paige St. John to discuss the protesters' demands and a lawsuit challenging long-term solitary confinement practices. Welcome to our program.
Good afternoon, Leonard.
Do we know how many prisoners are currently on a hunger strike?
We are currently today in the 11th day of the protest at 2,300 people who have missed at least nine meals. That's how the state keeps track of. They do not give us numbers of those who are refusing meals, may have dropped in or out of the protest and dropped back in. So there's some fluctuation in the number.
Now, how does a strike of this size develop? Do prisoners talk to each other across the prison system?
That's the amazing thing about this protest. It started and organized by people who are in solitary confinement, so you think that their ability to mass this size protest would be very difficult. But back in January, they began getting the word out and through networks, through their underground networks, through families, and then later through advocacy organizations, that come June 8th, they would go on a protest over solitary confinement conditions and issued an invitation for inmates in the other prisons in California to join them so that the morning of July 8th, there were 30,000 inmates in two-thirds of the prisons in California and inmates in four prisons out of the state who had been shipped there from California who began refusing their state meals. And that is by far the largest protest that the state has ever seen.
So it was 30,000. Now it's down to about 23,000 or so.
Yes. Yeah.
Pretty strong show of support.
Yeah. It's when you're past a week of refusing food, the physical effects begin to set in, and so we are starting to get into the hardcore numbers.
Earlier this month, there were 4,527 inmates being held in segregation cells at four state prisons, including 1,180 at Pelican Bay. What have conditions been like for the inmates in the solitary confinement situations?
The cells are 7.5 feet by 11. They're actually large by standards, by California standards, compared to many of the other prisons. But men in this situation have been in these cells for decades. There's more than 400 who have been confined to these cells since before 2002, and some people, including the strike leaders, have been there for 20-some years. There's no window. It's concrete. On all but one side, instead of bars on that last side, it's a steel plate with perforated holes that lets in light and air. They're out of that environment for an hour and a half a day and released by remote control into a concrete, it's derisively called a dog run, but it's a concrete wall kind of exercise yard. You look up about two stories up, you'll see a slice of sky, but really nothing else in that exercise area. And that's pretty much their existence. Some of them do share that cell with another individual. But more than 1,000 in California have no one in with them, and so it is true solitary confinement for those men.
Have there been any psychiatric studies about what that level of isolation can do to a person's mental state?
Oh, yes, and that is the subject of an ongoing federal lawsuit by the same people who are leading the hunger protest, and they're in the middle of, in that lawsuit, in settlement talks that have been ordered by a federal judge. But, yes, they've had psychiatrists testify in that case that this is very damaging to the human brain and psyche, that anything more than a few years in solitary confinement causes irreparable harm to an individual. Everything from changes in their psychoses to sleep deprivation. They have difficulty. They have no normal human contact with other individuals. And even when they're released then, and we've seen some of these cases, they have difficulty adjusting back into the real world.
Well, first they're released into the general prison population.
Because people in solitary confinement are generally not allowed parole, when they finish their sentence, they're released to the street without, and there's no rehabilitation programming per se in this situation, so they have the hardest time readjusting, and I'm told the highest recidivism rate of any kind of prisoner.
A former prisoner wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times the other day in which he asked, do you want somebody who's been put through this to be returned to your neighborhood? Asking whether we might try something a little more humane in our prison system.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there has been a shift in this country towards solitary confinement. These supermax prisons were all the rage in the late 80s, early 90s, when there was quite a bit of violence in prisons. And the prison gangs, which also that's California's gift to the nation in many respects, were on a warpath and between each other and with guards, and there were quite a few murders. And so the answer were these supermax facilities. But I'm seeing state by state that a decline in the use of this kind of solitary confinement. And California even just last year began a program that would allow inmates to kind of step out of solitary confinement, work their way through in 5 years. There's a lot of contention over whether that program is effective and or just a new name for same old practices. But the state said it was doing that because of recognition that the approach to solitary confinement needs to change and is changing nationally.
On the other hand, you reported today that the strike leaders have been moved to even more solitary conditions. What kinds of restrictions are being put on them now?
Yeah, they've been taken out of the pods in which they were housed, that they would use drain pipes and cracks in the wall to communicate and pass messages throughout the whole prison. Now they're in a separate, smaller building that does not have that access. It also does not have radio or television, so they're cut off from learning about what's going on in the strike. I'm told that in these cells, the air conditioning has now been cranked up, that these guys are dealing and doors left open at night. And we're talking about temperatures in the 40s at night. In the Pelican Bay area.
As a form of punishment?
The state correction officials don't confirm the cold air blast. That comes from lawyers who met with these prisoners yesterday. But they do confirm everything else about that. And yes, it's a form of punishment. And in fact, the state says they warned protest leaders that this was a possibility if they continued with the strike.
How much access did they have to their attorneys?
It's reducing. The state 2 days ago informed one of the most prominent advocate attorneys for inmates that she's now banned temporarily or for the time being from California prisons because a volunteer of hers posed an unnamed threat in her last visit to inmates back in May. They're not saying what that threat is, but while that is, quote, under investigation, that woman is now barred.
Well, can you deny somebody counsel?
Well, they have other lawyers who the team in the federal case, and no, they can't be denied to some extent, but yes, they can be denied when they argue that it poses a security threat. And that's the upper hand that the state has in all of this. These guys are in solitary confinement because they're considered dangerous. They're all, according to the state, been validated as either members of violent prison gangs or associates of violent prison gangs. And so the courts repeatedly have ruled that corrections departments have that ability to do what they must in order to keep everybody else safe.
Pelican Bay is in a very isolated part of Northern California. Is it difficult for family members of the inmates there to keep in contact or visit?
Yeah, many of these inmates say they've received no visits at all or some. Most of them are from the Los Angeles area, the complete other end of the state, and not from families that can afford the bus ticket fare to get up to Crescent City. It's an old lumberjack town on the coast by Oregon, and very secluded, very serene if you want to go salmon fishing, but not the kind of place that's easily gotten to, not even off a main highway.
Have the families of these inmates been involved in the activism?
Yeah, they are holding protests down in Los Angeles, and there have been a few rallies. There was a rally at one of the prisons that has solitary confinement near Los Angeles last weekend at Corcoran, for instance, and that was much closer for family members. And they also advocate quite a bit, you know, on behalf of some of these people do. They formed organizations that and newsletters and try to get the word out and raise, you know, more public awareness of their cause.
My guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning Los Angeles Times reporter Paige St. John. There was a hunger strike in California prisons 2 years ago. What was that about? And how was that resolved?
That's same issues and many of the same people involved. In fact, the same few individuals who are identified as the leader. They have five core demands. The predominant one is an end to indefinite solitary confinement, that the state has to put some kind of limit on how long it can keep a person in those conditions. The aspect that it is indefinite, that someone has to stay there until they're broken, is probably at the heart of this. They've also asked for programs, rehabilitation programs. They've asked for better food and clothing. And they've asked for an end to what's called race-based punishment in this prison system. California prisons are pretty much divided up by a few core prison gangs that are broken down along racial lines. Your African Americans and the Black Guerrilla Family, and
then the neo-Nazi groups.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Neo-Nazi groups as well.
Neo-Nazi groups, that's the Aryan Brotherhood, which then has the Nazi lowriders as kind of their grunt men. And you'll see that on prison yards. You'll see inmates exercising and clustered in groups that, based on really the color of their skin. But a lot of inmates say that just because you're Hispanic or Latino doesn't mean you're a member of the Nuestra Familia or the Mexican Mafia, and that it's wrong to treat everybody that way. And they allege that the corrections department, you know, has this glasses that see everything as being gang-related when it's not. But if there's an incident in a prison and it involves two of these racial groups or gangs, everybody in that race will be shut down and locked in their cells as kind of mass punishment.
You mentioned breaking the prisoners. Is that the goal here, to break the prisoners?
Yeah, I mean, there could be some argument on both sides over the language and how you couch that, but for the largest part, the guys who are identified as a gang member and thrown into solitary confinement have two roads out. One, they could die. The second is that they could debrief, which is the state's word. Snitching is the inmate's word for it, but basically agree to provide evidence against other inmates and of all crimes and gang activity, gang code lists, gang membership lists. And inmates say that, too, is a death sentence for you and your family, because if you are perceived as a traitor to a gang, you've signed your own death warrant. So, and then you've got people like one of the core leaders of this protest, Todd Ashker, who contends that he's not a gang member, has never been one. He has nothing to confess. So he's in a catch-22 of how to get out. You know?
Now, how difficult has it been for you as a journalist to cover this story? Has the Department of Corrections been forthcoming with information? Have they allowed you to interview strike leaders?
Yeah, no, they've not. It's extraordinarily difficult. Even during non-stressful times, the corrections department has what one lawmaker here called a bit of a bunker mentality. And California does not permit journalists to request an interview with an inmate by name. You can sometimes tour prisons talk to people you happen across on the prison yard, and that's the extent of it. So to report this story fully, we get a daily update of the number of protesters from the state, and not a whole lot more. I rely on the lawyers who get in and talk to their clients, and I rely on messages that inmates are able in some way to smuggle out of the prison. Then I've got the task of trying to confirm and corroborate those allegations. Sometimes they pan out, and sometimes they turn out to be rumor. But it's everything you get is colored by the person providing the information, because this protest there are no neutral sides.
Now, California's 33 prisons are currently at 150% of capacity. Is that a consequence of the three strikes law?
Yes, that's in part an offshoot of the Get Tough on Crime legislation that swept California as well as the rest of the nation.
Well, has the legalization of mm-hmm. marijuana to some degree at least eased that a bit?
I don't think so, because the crimes that these individuals are landing in on jail are often, because of the three strikes law, they are robberies and thefts. Crimes that normally would do 3 to 5 years, but when they get a two strikes, that ramps up the sentence, and three strikes, they're looking at the potential for life. So fairly minor crimes on that spectrum are landing, keeping people in the prison a long, long, long time.
Paige, we have very little time, but last month a court order required the state to reduce prison crowding to 137.5%. What solutions are open to the state? Early release?
Well, the state could increase good time credits. The state could easily come into compliance and reduce crowding by releasing people who are elderly or medically frail. They could continue to or increase the number of people they send out of state to private prisons, or even allow private prisons in state.
Although Governor Brown pledged to cancel out-of-state prison contracts, which would make the overcrowding problem worse, wouldn't it?
Yes, it will. And in fact, the federal judges have said, well, how do you intend to do that without making the problem worse? And he's been silent on that. He has instead gone to the U.S. Supreme Court for a second time to ask once again for the high court to overturn these federal orders.
Human Rights Watch has done a study and found that there are an awful lot of very old prisoners who are incapable of walking, let alone committing any crimes, who are being kept in prison simply because they've been given life without parole. Could they be released?
Yeah, geriatric parole is an issue. And it's pointed out that they're very expensive for the state to keep. There's a point at which turning prison wards into nursing homes really increases the cost, the medical cost, the physical changes that have to be made to facilitate wheelchairs and et cetera. So that's an issue.
Paige St. John is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist at the Los Angeles Times. I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, my pleasure, Leonard.